Lou Lamoriello, the GM of the Islanders, will join us around 6:10. Catch up with Lou. I have a feeling he's probably not going to give us access into the pitch to John Tavares the way that Kyle Dubas did earlier in the week. But we'll see. We'll see what we can pry out of Lou.
You'll get it out of him.
You think so?
Oh, I do.
I don't know about that.
I do think you'll get it out of him.
You got Dave Poulin in here, too.
Put the heat lamp and the rubber hose out. Might have to beat it out of him. But Lou, the man who once listed a player being injured as having overall body soreness.
I don't think he's giving us access to anything. But are you being serious, Pooley, or are you just...
I'm being serious. I think you'll get it out of him.
What are you going to ask him?
Well, I'd like to find out what his pitch was.
I want to find out about the statement where he said individual success.
If that was...
Well, but he said it again.
Yeah.
He said again now this week that this team has had a lot of individual success, but not team success. So it wasn't only the quote from, you know, thanking the process or whatever. He has repeated that mantra again.
Right. See, I didn't take that as a shot at Tavares the way some people have. I took it as a shot at the organization that's been a disaster for 9 years. Yeah. And what else are you going to have but individual success if the team sucks?
I guess because the word, we congratulate you on your success with the Islanders would have been a statement.
But what success?
Well, he had a great career with the Islanders.
Individual career.
Right, but why single out individual?
I don't know.
It is a word that jumped right off the page at me.
Really?
And just similarly, two words that jumped out of his when he was removed in Toronto. Yeah. And he said, today, it is my intent to honor the contract.
Yeah.
Two words stepped out. Today and intent. Yeah.
I remember that stood out
those
to me.
Two words.
Because we all knew Lou wasn't sticking around. There was no way Lou was going to stick around.
It was very carefully worded.
Let me ask you guys a question. If Lou actually stuck around as the consultant here with the Maple Leafs, do you think he would have been included in the Tavares pitch? Do you think it would have been Shanahan, Dubas, Lou, and Babcock?
No question. No question for me if he was still here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would have included him in that?
Yes.
Well, would I have included him, or would he have been included?
You're asking
if you thought, yeah.
Do I think he would, and would you?
I think they probably would have, although it seemed like everybody went in with three, didn't it? Like, did we see anyone go with four?
The owner in San Jose went in, but...
He did, and Doug Wilson's son was there, and Doug, so yeah, there were
And Pete DeBoer.
Yeah. There were more than three there.
I would not have brought him with me. I wouldn't have, because what's come out of this is, and I don't know how much truth there is in all this, but Shanahan went out of his way to promote that this was Dubas that ran everything. Yeah. Dubas put all the work in, and I don't dispute he put a lot of the work in, but I think Shanahan and Babcock factored into the pitch as well. But if you throw Lou into that mix, like I think that would have been very uncomfortable for Kyle Dubas to have Lou Lamoriello in that room.
And essentially you eliminated those questions by making the move you did.
Right.
And that's you eliminated all of those questions. They were all removed. So you didn't have to go on an individual basis and say, and even have anyone think, is Lou going to be involved here or is he not?
And you know what's going to happen next week is July 15th comes. In addition to being my mother's birthday, that's the day that Mark Hunter can go somewhere.
Really?
And if I had to bet, I'll bet that rental car outside, which is not mine, that... He goes to the island.
You think so? Yeah. But how does that add up, though? Because I thought the whole point was Mark Hunter wants to be a GM.
He will be.
How?
So Lou says, you come aboard as our director of player personnel, senior vice president, whatever. And then when I step aside, you're the GM.
And the one wrinkle could be there is son Chris.
Right.
That could be the one wrinkle in that formula.
Chris Lamoriello works for the Islanders.
And was there and was an assistant GM in Jersey and ran all their minor league systems. So I knew Chris from the American Hockey League.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what
he... Does he not fly?
Chris?
I heard a story once that he doesn't fly
anymore. He gets to Hilton Head for the American League meetings. So
you can drive.
Long drive, yeah.
Anyway, Lou's coming up later this afternoon. What's up with Erik Karlsson here, Pooley? Like, what are we waiting for here? What's going on here? Because there are rumors. Last night it was done. He's going to Tampa. Then that got dragged back. Now he's not going to Tampa. Could be third teams involved in this. What are you bracing
for? Well, Brian, if you watch SportsCenter tonight or That's Hockey with Gino Retta at 7 p.m.
Yeah. Or listen to Overdrive right now.
Gino and I had a conversation this morning, and he said, you know, we've talked about the players. We've talked about the cap. We've talked about all those things. Could you just break it down from a management standpoint on what the holdup is? And And the first part of the holdup is that this is a legacy trade. The second part for me is the size of your group and what your group, what exactly your group can do. And I think Stevie Yzerman's effectiveness in getting complicated deals done. Think of Martin St. Louis. Think of the deals that he's got done. Is that his group is himself, Julian Brisbois, Pat Verbeek, who represents the pro scouting side and is assistant GM, and Al Murray on the amateur side.
Yeah.
Four. And
Tom Curvers was part of that.
Right.
He's gone to Minnesota.
Right. And also with, assuming he keeps in conversation with the owner, but has full autonomy to do what has to be done. A lot of people aren't like that. And, you know, and I'm not sure exactly if you were to say to me right now, what is Pierre Dorion's inner group? I'm not sure how I'd answer that right now.
Well, I would think Melnick would be a part of it.
But he's not there. Yeah. And
it's interesting about Tampa because if you look at them, their team is signed for next year. Really, Adam Ernie's the only guy that they, you know, don't have signed yet, and he was a healthy scratch most of the year. So they can add Carlson. If they can get the Callahan contract off the books, it gets tricky. You can't buy him out. He's had shoulder surgeries out till December probably, so you can't buy him out.
Right.
But if you can get someone to take that contract, Carlson's number is only 6.5 this year.
Yeah, so he's fine this year.
He can slip Carlson in this year. The problem is if you want to sign him beyond this year, and even if you don't, Tampa's facing a major cap jam next summer. Now, what do you give Kucherov?
But you've got three expiring contracts on D.
Yeah.
The only one of which you may keep is Strowman, because Girardi would expire and Coburn would expire and go.
Right, but
there is enough money there. And don't forget, next year that's approximately $8+ million. Those two guys. And you've got his 6.5 from this year. You've got 14.5.
You've got to do Brayden Point next summer.
Yeah,
you've got to do
it's complicated, no question.
I wonder if Tampa is married to the idea of keeping Kucherov.
Wow.
He had no even strength goals in their last 12 playoff games. He had two power play goals in their last 12 playoff games. He faded a little bit down. Like, he's a good player.
If they are choosing not to be married to him, he won't be single for long.
No, someone would scoop him up.
No, for sure they would. But here's the thing. You got to make decisions. And there aren't many wingers that make, you know, north of eight. Claude Giroux does, but he's a center who's moved to the wing. There are some, and Ovechkin leads the way at nine. But if you got to keep guys, you're keeping your centers, your D, the goalies.
Are getting there now.
Yeah. So could you, you know, you pay Brayden Point. You got Stamkos. You've got kids coming. They draft really well. You could, if Kucherov's not part of the equation, it gives them a lot more flexibility. They had a real tough contract negotiation with them last time.
Well, here's another angle, though. Somehow, and credit to Steve Yzerman, he pulled this off. He got Stamkos to agree to 8.5.
Mm-hmm.
How he got Hedman to agree to, I believe, 8.25 is beyond me. And don't give me the state tax crap, because if you're that good of a player, you can say, thank you, Steve, I'll take the state tax, and I'll still take the $11 million. Carlson ain't falling for that. I don't see it.
But I think he sells the sneaker and jeans theory very, very well.
Yeah, he does.
Very well.
That's
But sneaker and jeans theory is that once you have a really nice pair of jeans and a really nice pair of sneakers, then you're set, right? You can't wear two pairs of jeans at the same time. So, in other words, when you get to $40 or $60 or $70 million, you're going to be fine.
Right, but Vegas can do that too, though.
He sells that thought process very well to those guys.
I don't dispute that. But again, what is stopping Carlson from saying, thank you, Steve, I would love that, but I'll still take the $11 million?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's stopping him from saying that?
In which case, Yzerman says it won't be here.
Then don't make the trade. No, unless it's a one-year deal.
A one-year deal.
Which I would still probably do because they're that good.
If you're Tampa, I mean, your goalie was a Vezina Trophy finalist. You have the Norris Trophy winner. You're stacked up front. You lost in seven games in the conference final.
And, Gordo, I was trying to think, as we look ahead, if he were to go to Tampa, which, have there been recent teams with two Norris Trophy winners?
Anaheim in 07.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, like, I got a funny email.
They went ahead and won a cup.
Our audience relations.
Not bad.
So a guy emailed our audience relations department really upset with me about, you know, why aren't you saying that? How can the Leafs manage Carlson and Hedman when people here were talking about how do you manage Matthews and Tavares? Well, you play two defensemen at once.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's a power play, you don't play two centers at once. So
you can buy them 30-plus minutes each.
So you think about Anaheim in 07. Pronger and Niedermayer. there was when the ice time was first available, like to be broken down and scraped, there were playoff games where one or the other was on the ice for all but like
That's
4 minutes.
Brilliant.
Because only after a penalty kill when they played together would they not be on the ice. So if you have Carlson and you have Hedman,
it's an embarrassment of riches.
You can have one or the other on the ice almost the entire game.
So how does let's put a Toronto spin on this, because Toronto's still buzzing from getting Tavares.
Sure.
If Carlson goes there and somehow Yzerman works this trade out without taking a significant piece, which I don't see how Ottawa can allow that to happen. Like I just don't see how you can trade within your division a guy like Erik Karlsson and not pull out a significant piece that's on this team right now.
I'm looking for two.
Yeah, so am I. Yeah. Like Braden Point would have to be a part of the deal.
I don't think Tampa will trade Braden Point.
I don't think they will either. But if you're Ottawa, you hang up the phone then.
You say we'll go to Vegas. We'll go to whoever else.
Like, I mean, thanks, Steve.
But
what does it do though? If it works out, if Yzerman pulls this off and they're still loaded, and now you add Carlson to Hedman and McDonough, they just locked up long term. Yeah. You got Vasilevsky. You got a good coach.
Think of McDonough as a three,
right? Like, how are the
That's
Leafs?
Good. Strawman is a four.
Are the Leafs close? Are they on par with Tampa? I mean, you said, I believe, a couple of days ago you thought the Leafs were the best team in the East.
I did.
If Carlson goes to Tampa, how does that affect
that? Tampa, that skewers it.
So forwards, the Leafs are better.
Yeah.
Right?
Up the middle, for sure.
Well, up the middle. And even on the wings.
It's interesting with Tavares, but Tampa was number one in goals scored last year, number three in power play.
Mm.
Yeah. And it was their defense that needed improving.
Yeah, so on defense, Tampa would be better, and Vasilevsky in goal over Freddie Anderson, probably. I mean, Vasilevsky was a...
It's pretty close, though.
Vasilevsky was a vet in the final.
And so. Vasilevsky behind that defense core is much better than Anderson behind the defense core in Toronto.
So the intriguing thing for Tampa is if you trade for Carlson, now presumably, as you said, Dave, there's assets from the roster going the other way, so that'll take some of that off. Would you then consider signing Carlson to an extension, getting rid of some of your older players and turning it over to kids up front? Like you're keeping Stamkos, you're trying to keep Point, but now Anthony Cirelli, who played for them, you know, was a regular regular season playoffs, he gets plugged in.
Yanni Gourde,
Cal Foote, you know, in 2 years, then becomes a regular on your D. Like they've drafted really well.
And this is the art that Winnipeg's trying to pull off as we speak.
I was just going to ask you that. Yeah. So is that do you follow that model?
It's exactly what Winnipeg's trying to do.
So just spend. Because Steve Yzerman's from, you know, the one thing Detroit had all those years. You think about when they won the Stanley Cup with Lidstrom, Rafalski, Stewart, Cronwall. You know, their top four.
Stud back end.
Brad Stewart was a second overall draft pick. When he got to Detroit, they said, we don't care if you ever get a point.
Mm-hmm.
You're out there to be mobile,
settle in comfortably at number four,
and move the puck. That's what he was a great four for them.
And that could be essentially what McDonough ends up being, 3-4.
You just say to McDonough, you're out there to kill you're here to kill penalties.
Points are a bonus.
Move the puck a little bit. You're not. I mean, if you look at it this way, Brian, if you had from an ice time perspective, this is how Anaheim did it. So you've got 120 minutes in a game for defensemen to play. You play two at a time. So Pronger, Niedermeyer were like 27 each. Right, so you're at 54 minutes. Then you come back with your second pair. Now, they were...
And Bosch was pretty good for them.
And they're out there with two other guys who they're carrying.
Two other guys. So really, your third pair only has to play like 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, and don't you think that's kind of going to apply here in Toronto with that fourth line center position? Like, in a similar way?
Well,
like, they don't play as many minutes, but...
I know. What would you hope, though, is your fourth line center and... plays some sort of functional role as a penalty killer.
Yeah.
What if
he has to play a role besides just being the fourth line?
What if you do what Tampa does and some other teams and just go 7D and 11 forwards? Mm-hmm. You know, Tampa was so deep at center.
I don't like 7D.
Well, and
especially with studs
and
like
Babcock
that.
Doesn't like it either, but the one thing that we saw with Tampa that works pretty well is if you've got real good centers, you can rotate them through more. If you're only playing three centers, they can rotate through your fourth line, right?
Yeah, with special teams and everything else that happens.
Yeah. Now, the only problem is that makes it more difficult to play the, you know, two centers together on the power play. Yeah.
A couple more points on Ottawa on what would hold things up. Now you're getting the deal done. You've got the pieces in place. Now the agent has to get involved to get the deal structured. So that holds it up for a little bit. And then when do you officially say to other teams, we are done, we're closed.
Yeah.
Because so now you've got other teams lurking, and they can, and there are guys that like to jump in late just to mess things up.
Right.
You know? And so you've got all those different parts happening, you know, and then on top of all of those things that we just mentioned, what if they are trying to include a third team to get that Ryan? Well, that's just who's talking to him.
Could Bobby Ryan be included in that too?
Well,
in terms of a third team?
Yeah. How does maybe, and if they can get Callahan off the books. Now, maybe Callahan, I mean, Callahan's had two major hip operations, right? Now he's had major shoulder surgery. It's going to keep him out. I mean, if he's on LTI, long-term injury, long enough.
With a team that uses it effectively.
Yeah. So, intriguing question for Tampa. I mean, balancing the short-term versus the long-term. I mean, we talk about this every year, Brian, at the deadline. Six teams go for it. At the most, only one wins.
Mm-hmm. Macro,
and sometimes,
micro.
And sometimes a team that wins doesn't go for it at the deadline. Washington didn't really. They got Kempney for a third-round pick.
They didn't load up at the deadline. And they got Yerbeck from Montreal.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't really.
Hoping one of them worked.
they weren't
one of them worked.
They weren't trading a first-round pick for a guy in an expiring contract. They weren't in that market at all.
Yeah. Dave Poulin in studio. Brian Hayes, Gord Miller here on Overdrive. The Leafs made a signing today, Tyler Ennis. And you know, he's had a lot of injury problems the past few years. And concussion problems, right? But a small guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I wonder if Babcock's going to start freaking out here.
Well, you've got your choice at fourth line center right now. You got a small guy or you got a really big guy in Freddie Gauthier? You know, a younger guy with an upside still. So, you know, Gauthier must need waivers this year. I haven't even looked, but you'd have to.
I mean,
think
this is 5 years of pro. Yeah. You would have to think so, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to get through because somebody's going to, because he shows enough signs and he can win a faceoff and kill a penalty. And once again, you want that fourth line center to be able to play a role. Like, ideally, if you're fourth line, each one of them on it does something special teams related.
Yeah.
It's magic.
Yeah, for sure. That's how the games change, right, David? Because you don't have a fighter anymore.
No, but even...
So you're not carrying a guy who just fights.
Yeah, I hate to refer to Winnipeg all the time, but Joel Armia was on the fourth line but playing on the power play, and Matthew Perreault could play on the power play, and, you know, Andrew Kopp could kill a penalty.
The Islanders, right? When they had Martin, Cizikas, and Clutterbuck... That may have been the best fourth line of the league because you didn't have to worry about them. You could put them out against almost anybody. They'd be fine.
Yeah, in a defensive role.
You didn't have to hide them. They could kill penalties. They could, you know, disrupt the other team's top players. Like, you love that. And now a fourth line that plays, right, is really a component of most good teams. Most teams have a fourth line that you don't have to hide.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sure that Tyler Ennis, health-wise, that's been his issue. And, you know, he's not a big physical guy.
Well, and it's a depth signing. It's the league minimum. They can bury that in the minors. Won't count against the cap if he doesn't make the team, or maybe the 13th forward. But, you know, I'm thinking more philosophically. We're still trying to figure out exactly what Dubas envisions here. You know, it's easy to sell people on John Tavares. You know, that's a pretty good sales pitch. But where else are you looking to build? What else are you looking to add? And at some point, Babcock is going to push back, if he's not already, in terms of what he envisions, because there's some old school there with Mike Babcock. Oh, yeah. Like, he likes some size.
He likes to keep the fly. His term is keep the flies off.
Yes, and there's Pollock's in Dallas now. Matt Martin's back on the island. There is not much size here on this team.
If you sit back and wait until the end of August, there's going to be 75 to 100 guys that played some games in the league last year that won't have a contract. Mm-hmm.
But ideally, you'd like on your fourth line to be... You know, if you're loaded up the way you are, your first line stays exactly the same. Your second line is Tavares, and I would put Andreas Johnsson on the left side and Marner on the right. And then your third line leaves Kadri and Marleau together, one of Connor Brown or Kasperi Kapanen. And then the other one is your 10th forward playing in a special team function.
Mm-hmm.
And then Carl Grundstrom could be your fourth line left wing and a Gauthier in the middle. And there you've got Grundstrom does have grit. He's not tough guy, but he has grit.
Right. Well, and Hyman is, I mean, he doesn't fight necessarily.
No.
He will if he has to, but he hits everything in sight.
I'm just looking at the list of unrestricted free agents at center that you could be looking at. You know, Torrey Mitchell, Sean Mathias, Mark Letestu, Lance Boma, Dom Moore's on there again. I mean, there are enough guys that you would look at and say, you know, I mean, Daniel Winnick's an unrestricted free agent. I mean,
and you can get those guys at one-year deals.
Well, not just that, Brian. You get them on PTOs. Mm-hmm. You bring them in a professional tryout in August. If they don't have a contract in August,
yeah,
They're going to go on a PTO. And we talked about this the other day. There were, I think the number was 80. 80 guys went to camp last year on PTOs, and I think 11 of them got contracts.
Yeah, that's scary.
Right? That's your only choice, right? If you're, it's either that or Europe.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're a guy,
that's the reality of the salary cap.
If you're Daniel Winnick and you're sitting there at the end of August, then take a 1 year one way deal at $650, or go to camp on a PTO. They give you a 1 year deal at $650 on a one way. You take it.
Mm-hmm. Dave Pullen in studio. Did you guys read into? I was surprised this did make more waves, and maybe it's because, you know, I haven't been listening to every single show in the city or reading every single piece in the paper, and I haven't personally brought this up. But when Babcock was asked after the Tavares signing, he had Hyman off the Matthews line.
Yeah.
And the Matthews-Babcock meeting and everyone's...
July.
I understand that. but then, Pooley, if it's July, why not just say, obviously, we're keeping that line together? Like, why would he take
more
Hyman...
More fun this way.
He's got to be careful with this market,
though. Who did he have there?
He had Marlowe.
Marlowe.
He had Marlowe with Matthews and Nylander. He had Hyman down. The reason I bring it up is, again, because there was something happened between Matthews and Babcock. Babcock wasn't just in the area. He went to meet him. It got out. Something went on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if it had something to do with who Matthews is playing with. He's played almost every shift of his NHL career 5-on-5 with Hyman on the wing. I love Zach Hyman and what he brings, but it wouldn't shock me if that was part of the conversation. Can you put Marlowe with me? Maybe Janssen.
It very well might have been. And I think, you know, the point is now you have more top six players. And whether it's top nine, but whatever, however you want to configure it. You know, it doesn't matter to me what you call me as long as you play me.
But if you look at Babcock in Detroit, His MO was always two offensive players with
a guy,
a defensive / digger / mm-hmm. whatever you want to call him, right?
Always his philosophy.
Always his philosophy.
But I don't remember him flying over to Sweden to meet with Zetterberg in a week after meetings.
That very well could have happened.
But
we wouldn't know that.
We do know that early on in his time in Detroit that Nick Lidstrom sat down with him, because mm-hmm. Lidstrom's talked about it and said, you know, You got to pull your foot off the gas a little bit here.
It was the other way around. The coach didn't sit down with the player. Player said to the coach,
Nick,
we're going to sit down. Meeting.
Nick said, come to my office.
Right.
Wait, you have an office?
Well, I do think that's something that people are going to track, I mean, without question.
Well, now, what's interesting about this is that now it's not just that ice time's available. Now it's being broken down into who plays with who for how much. Right? You know who's on the ice with who for how long. You can break it down to not just on the fly, but from face-offs.
Every which way.
You know exactly who the coach wants on the ice at a given moment and who he wants them with. And that turns into a whole discussion. And it's not overstating the case. I think the biggest revolution in hockey in the last 20 years is not the disclosure of salaries. It's the disclosure of ice time.
That's really funny.
It's the disclosure of ice time.
I remember in college, the college coaches said, don't be bringing those minutes down to the locker room after the game.
The American,
like, don't bring them down.
And you know what? In the American League, they are still not available.
Really?
No.
It's great, isn't it?
If the Leafs want to know how much a guy for the Grand Rapids Griffins plays, unless they track it themselves, they have no access. I'm pretty sure that's still the case.
It was the case.
I think you're right, because I remember looking it up during the playoff run. I wanted to find out how many minutes Dermott was playing.
It's not available.
And you're right, because I went to the website, because I didn't think he was playing as much as I thought he would be playing, considering he was an NHL guy. And I was like, I wonder how many minutes is this guy playing? And I couldn't find the minutes.
And it's tracked, because the Marlies know the numbers.
Well, why wouldn't you track your own minutes?
But they, like, when the Marlies played Texas, there's a stats crew in both rinks that's doing the real-time stats, and both teams get access to the numbers. They're just not publicly revealed.
Right.
They're not on the website, and you can't find out the other team's numbers.
Well, in the NHL, you can, and it's a beautiful thing.
It is, and it's positive and negative, right? Because now, Jager used to... I remember Vladimir Malahov, who's a great guy. Vladdy's a great guy. New Jersey won the cup in Dallas in 2000. He's in the dressing room. The cup is 10 feet from him, and he's looking at the game sheet to see how much he played. Like, the cup almost hit him.
And he's more concerned about why he didn't get to 23 minutes that night.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's That's how you determine how much the coach likes you. I mean, let's be honest.
And when you play, who plays when?
Right. Right.
Who's used for you and against you,
who's
right?
Playing a, yeah. Who's playing with a one-goal lead in the last minute?
Anyway, well, it is only July.
Right. Brian Hayes. Brian Hayes is always on the ice in the last minute with a lead.
Always. Very reliable guy. All right, Pooley, good seeing you, man.
Always a pleasure.
Where are you off to now? Sports Center, that's hockey?
I've done Sports Center. I'm going to do TH.
The okay. Car wash.
The last Geno Red of the year.
Oh, yeah, this is it for Geno.
Join that's us right, tonight. Yeah.
Of the season. I'm assuming Geno will be back in 2018.
Calendar year.
Yeah, he'll be back in September, which means the Carlson
fiscal
trade.
You know the Carlson trade will happen tomorrow.
Or 7:31 p.m. Eastern time.
Quiet time. Yeah. Depends how good the trade it is.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay, guys, have
all right,
a great
good
weekend.
Good seeing you, Pulling. There's Dave Pulling, our hockey analyst.